Good evening. I appreciate the opportunity, as always, to stand before you and present a lesson from God's Word. In Proverbs chapter 18, verse 24, it says, "There is a friend who stands closer than a brother, who sticks closer than a brother." Got a special guest tonight. Lance Perry is visiting with us and his wife, Genoa. Lance, for me, is that friend. I appreciate his friendship. We've had many adventures. We have stood in the middle of the Smokies in hip-deep snow. We've been stranded on an island in the Gulf Coast in the middle of a tornado. We've driven through the Gulf of Mexico in a car. Not many people can say that. We have been in the middle of a monsoon rain on an island off the coast of Georgia. We've got all kinds of stories, and I could go on all night long. If I'd known he was going to visit tonight, I might have developed a sermon with all those stories in it. But as it is, we'll muddle by. But I appreciate him being here this evening. The man on the screen, a few months ago, I was flipping through Netflix and trying to figure out something to watch, and I came across a show called River Monsters. And River Monsters is hosted by this gentleman here. His name's Jeremy Wade. Jeremy Wade's, he might be the best fisherman in the world, I don't know. But what he does on this show is he goes to all these exotic rivers and he catches just these monstrous fish. This fish here that he's caught is a Goliath tiger fish. It's found in rivers in Africa, I'm told. At least that's where he caught it. To my knowledge, this fish is not in the Elk River or the Tennessee River, so we can rest easy about that. But at the end of every one of his shows, I kind of got engrossed in this show, River Monsters, and I just had to watch one episode after another, after another, after another. At the end of every one of these shows, he'll usually end that show with some kind of reflective comment. One of his shows, he had this to say. At the end, he said, "Despite our differences, we share a fundamental belief that there is more to this world than what's on the surface." There's more to this world than what's on the surface. It kind of caught my ear. I believe that's true. I believe that there is oftentimes more to this world than what's on the surface. And I believe that when we look in the Bible, oftentimes we see very simple, very mundane stories or passages. And I think they're put there for a reason. And I think more often than not, there are more to those stories than what is initially on the surface. And so I want us tonight to put our thinking caps on to start thinking in that frame that there's possibly more to this than what's on the surface. And we're going to examine a very simple story in the Bible in this sermon titled Gone Fishing. In John chapter 21, that's our text. You might mark there because we'll be referencing that chapter back and forth several times this evening. But in John chapter 21, in verses 1 through 3, we read this. After these things, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, also the Sea of Galilee. And he revealed himself this way. Simon Peter and Thomas called the twin and Nathanael, in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee and two others of his disciples were together. And Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going out to fish." And they said to him, "We'll go with you also." And they went out and they entered in a boat immediately. And that night they caught nothing. Is there more on the surface of this story than what appears, or more beneath the surface of this story than what appears? Why would they go fishing now? Let's look at the context of this story. Jesus had just been crucified. Just a few chapters over earlier in John chapter 19, verses 14 through 18, we read this. Now it happened the day of preparation for the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, talking of Pilate, "Behold, your king." So they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." And Pilate said to them, Shall I crucify your king? And the chief priest answered, We have no king but Caesar. So they handed him over to be crucified. They took Jesus, therefore, and he went out bearing his cross to the place of the skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with him two other men, one on either side, and Jesus in between. Peter just seen this. They had just been present while this happened, and yet just a few passages later, a few verses later, Peter says, Hey guys, I'm going to go fishing. And the apostles say, Hey, we'll tag along. We also know that Jesus had just risen from the dead in John chapter 20, in verses 1 through 4. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene, we studied this last month, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark and saw the stone that had already been taken away from the tomb. So she ran and she came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved, and said to them, They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they've laid him. So Peter and the other disciple went forth, and they were going to the tomb. The two were running together. Jesus had just been risen. They'd just seen the empty tomb. What's beneath the surface of this story? Let's play detective for just a little bit here. Let's look at what we know so far. We know that Jesus had just been put to death. He had been crucified. Peter had seen that. We know that he had seen Jesus laid in the tomb. He knew where the tomb was. They had seen the stone rolled away. Therefore, Jesus had just risen. Peter, in fact, had run into the tomb. Kind of an odd time to go fishing. Yet Peter decides to, I'm going to go fishing. Well, what do we know? Now, let me back up right here. And let me say this. Let me put a disclaimer on this and say this. We may never know the actual decision and a definitive answer to this question. Why would Peter go fishing now? We may never know that. Maybe one day I hope to ask him. I hope to be able to say, hey, what's the actual reason for this? Maybe one day I'll get to. But we do know a few things, and let's examine what we do know from the Bible. We know that Peter was a fisherman before he ever came to Christ, before he ever changed his life. In Matthew chapter 4 and verses 18 through 20, in walking by the Sea of Galilee, Jesus saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. And they immediately left their nets and followed him. Look at that word, immediately left their nets and followed him. Now what I'm told historically from the type of fishing they were doing, they would take a net, they would sling it over their head, they would toss it out into the salt water, and they would reel that net back into the boat. In doing that, sand and salt would work their ways into the fibers of those nets. They were using natural nets. They didn't have nylon and things like that. And so one very, very critical point is when they would get done using their nets, throwing those nets into the sea and reeling them back in, one thing they would always have to do would be rinse those nets out in fresh water and rid the fibers of that sand and that salt. But here we're told that they immediately, when Jesus comes by and he says, Follow me and I will make you fishers of men, they immediately left their net. What does that signify? It signifies that they're leaving those nets. They're not coming back to those things. They're going to be ruined. And so by immediately leaving their nets, we can surmise that these men were deciding to make a life choice and change their lives, change what they did. But here, just a short while afterwards, after Jesus has been crucified and put to death and they've seen the empty tomb, Peter says, I'm going fishing. Was Peter going back to the life he knew before Christ? Was he going back to what he did before he ever met Jesus? This is the Peter that walked on water in Matthew chapter 14, verse 28. As Jesus was walking on the sea, and Peter says, Lord, if that's you, permit me and I'll come to you. I'll step out on the water. This is the same Peter. This is the same Peter who drew his sword in defense of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane while the scribes, Pharisees, chief priests, while they come to take Jesus away, to arrest him and take him away to a mock trial and falsely accuse him and ultimately put him to death and crucify him. This is the Peter who drew his sword, and as far as we know, the only one to do so. Drew his sword and struck Malchus, servant of the high priest. The same Peter. This is the same Peter who a few passages earlier had said, "Christ, I'm ready. Jesus, I'm ready to die for you. I'll never deny you." Matthew chapter 26, verses 31 through 35 says, "Then Jesus said to them, 'All of you will be offended because of me this night, for it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I have risen again, I will go before you into Galilee.' And Peter answered and said to him, 'Though all shall be offended because of you, I will never be offended.' And Jesus said to him, 'Truly I say to you, that this night before the cock crows, you shall deny me three times.' And Peter said to him, 'Though I should die with you, yet I will not deny you.'" All the disciples said the same. The same Peter. It's also the same Peter that failed in that vow. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 69 through 74, "And Peter sat outside in the court, and a girl came to him saying, 'You also were with Jesus of Galilee.' But he denied all before them, saying, 'I do not know what you're saying.' And when he had gone out into the porch, another saw him and said to those there, 'This one was also with Jesus of Nazareth.' And again he denied, this time with an oath, and said, 'I do not know the man.' And after a little while, those who stood by came and said to Peter, 'Surely, surely you're also one of them, for your speech betrays you.' Then he began to curse and to swear and said, 'I do not know the man.' Immediately the cock crowed, and Peter remembered the word of Jesus, who said to him, 'Before the cock crows, you shall deny me three times.' And he went out, and he wept bitterly." Another mundane passage that has something beneath the surface, I believe. He went out, and he wept bitterly. Have we ever felt like Peter? Maybe we don't know the actual reason, the definitive reason. Maybe we can't say for absolute certain what Peter was doing, why he was going fishing here. But we do know how Peter felt, don't we? We can sympathize with how he felt when he went out and he wept bitterly. Have you ever said, "Lord, I'll never again, never again. Lord, I promise I won't. Lord, I will not. If only..." You fill in the blanks. We've said those prayers before, haven't we? What? How does that end? Do we ever keep those vows? Do we ever truly do that? We always fall. Romans chapter 3 in verse 23 says, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." Not one here, not one of us can say, "I deserve salvation. I deserve..." Not a one of us can walk to the pearly gates one day and knock on them and say, "Let me in." Brother Guy, how long have you been preaching? A long time. 82? Is that right? Are you almost 82? Not 82 yet? 81? Still 81 now. I'm trying to make him older than he is. 20, 30, 40 years, 50-something years in God's service. Serving God for 50 years, but still not a perfect man. Still, I dare say, couldn't say, "I deserve the sacrifice of Jesus. I deserve to go to heaven. I deserve what God has done for me." Not a one of us can say that. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. But there's more to that story. There's more beneath the surface. Going back to Peter in John chapter 21 and verses 4 through 8, Jesus welcomes Peter back. But when the day was now breaking, Jesus stood on the beach, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. So Jesus said to them, "Children, you do not have any fish, do you?" And they answered him, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net on the right-hand side of the boat, you will find a catch." So they cast, and then they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. Therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved, most scholars believe that's John, said to Peter, "It is the Lord." So when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and he threw himself into the sea. But the other disciples came in a little boat, for they were not far off from land, but about 100 yards away, dragging a net full of fish. Can you hear the excitement? Can you hear the build-up in that story? When Jesus is on the shore and they realize it's Jesus, John says to Peter, "Hey, that's Jesus. That's the Lord. It's the Lord." And Peter, without hesitation, without waiting, he can't even wait to row the boat 100 yards to shore. He puts on his garment and he jumps in and he swims to shore before any of the rest of them. And we can only imagine that he runs up to Jesus dripping wet and breathless. But you know what? We're never told. We're never told that Peter fell down on his knees before God and he lifted up his eyes and crying and kissed his feet and said, "Jesus, I'm so sorry." But we are told in John chapter 21, verses 15 through 17, of an exchange between Peter and Jesus. It says, "So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?' And he said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Tend my lambs.' And he said to him again a second time, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' And he said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' And he said to him, 'Shepherd my sheep.' And he said to him a third time, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' And Peter was grieved because he said to him a third time." What else happened a third time? What's below the surface of this? Remember, just a few passages over, Peter had denied Christ three times. And he said to him, "Lord, you know all things. And Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." You know, Jesus forgave Peter. When Mary Magdalene enters into the tomb, and the angel says to her, "He's not here. Behold, he's risen. Go and tell," y'all remember what he says to her from our study last month? He says, "Go and tell the other disciples, especially Peter. Why? Because Jesus forgave Peter. Because God has always demanded of us, not a perfect person, not a perfect human being, but God has always demanded of us a perfect heart. In Joel chapter 2 and verses 12 through 13, "Yet even now, says Jehovah, turn to me with all your heart and with fasting and with weeping and with mourning. Yes, tear your heart and not your robes. And turn to Jehovah your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and of great kindness, and he pities because of evil." In 1 John chapter 1 and verse 9, "If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins." God has always demanded a perfect heart from us, not perfection of deeds. None of us can say we deserve heaven. None of us can say that we've earned it. But one day when we stand before the judgment seat of Christ, of God, One day maybe we can say, Lord, I've done my best. I've done my best. When I was a kid, my mom rented me this movie one time. There used to be a video store up there on the square, Mathis Videos. And she went into Mathis Video and she rented this movie called The Time Machine. I may be telling my age a little bit here when I tell you that I watched that movie when I was a kid. But in that movie, this guy dressed in a tuxedo of some type, he gets into a contraption like that on the bottom left-hand corner. And he cranks that thing up and he travels through time and he has all sorts of different adventures. But when I watched that movie, I became obsessed with time travel. I decided right then and there, you know what, I'm gonna be the first person. I'm going to do it. I ran to my mom and I said, hey, is time travel possible? Is that movie true? And she says, no, time travel is not possible. It doesn't exist. You can't do it. I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be the first one. I'm going to do it. And I tried everything. So from that time forward through the majority of my childhood, I devoted to attempting time travel. I would get clocks and break them open and wire them back together. I would mix different things in the sink. I tried mixing shaving cream and Clorox and tried using hair dryers and clocks and everything imaginable to travel in time. Never was able to do it. One time, Jim, my cousin, was spending the night with me. And me and Jim went downstairs in my dad's workshop in the basement. And my dad had a cool workshop and all sorts of gadgets and wires and everything down there and spare parts from things that had torn up. And we went down there and we found a clock. It was a timer. And we found this timer. And we set it out on these saw horses. And we stuck all these wires and switches and different parts from different things. I still don't know what they were, but stuck all these things together, and it had three plugs. Three plugs, I remember that because it was hard. Every outlet only had two plugs. And it had three plugs, and we crammed those three plugs into three different outlets. And it had about 12 different switches. And so after we plugged that thing in, we started flipping those switches. And we would count down each time we would flip one of those switches. 3, 2, 1. 3, 2, and we take turns. And me and Jim were sitting there, and we flipping all those switches. And when we flipped the last switch, we fully expected this huge energy bubble to engulf us and us to instantly be transported back to the time of the dinosaurs. And the machine started humming. It made this kind of guttural hum. And we all know that hum that means something big is fixing to happen. It went kind of like this. And it got louder, and it got louder, and it got faster, and it got faster. And then the machine went, phoom, 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 shot three big green fireballs about the size of a basketball out of the middle of that machine. And it filled the entire basement with this acrid kind of smoke that stings your eyes like plastic had been burning. I'm sure it had somewhere. And Jim was holding part of that machine. And he dropped it and made this horrible crash. And we ran. And pretty soon there was a knock on the basement door. And somebody came to the door and started hollering through the smoke. They couldn't even see us. And we came running up to the light of that door and parted that smoke. And it was my brother. And I came running up to him. I said, Bert, Bert, Bert. It was awesome. It was amazing. You know what, though? It ruined that clock. And we didn't see a single dinosaur. Never did get to travel in time. Never was able to do that. But you know what's behind me here? There's water. Beneath that water, there is a form of time travel. Now, you're not going to be transported back and see dinosaurs, or you're not going to see knights or anything like that. But you know what you are going to find beneath that water is forgiveness and a way to erase all those past mistakes. a way to go back and erase those things we wish had never happened. Really, that's the appeal of time travel, is it not? So I guess in a way, years later, I did find a way to travel in time. And that was through God's grace, God's love, and God's mercy. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, that's open to you. That's open to you. God's grace, God's love, and God's mercy. Or if you're here tonight and you've fallen away, just like Peter, then that's open to you too, His forgiveness. Won't you come experience time travel while together we stand.